I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. Hello, I'm Vic Cohen, and welcome to It's a Fair Question. It's great to have you. We have an awesome show because on tonight's show, we're going to be talking about my favorite subject. Well, my second favorite subject. My first would be sex, to be completely honest. My second favorite subject would be hidden camera comedy. Now, if you know my career at all, that's been a big part of my career. I did a lot of work on a show called How We Do It, which is an NBC primetime show with Howie Mandel, and I was the Man on the Street reporter there, but also did a lot of really crazy hidden camera bits. And I'm currently on a show writing and also acting. The name of the show is called Deal With It on TBS, and it's already a hit. And we are currently, as I speak, well, not exactly as I speak. It was earlier today. We were already in our next shooting cycle. And it's very exciting because I have with me, with us tonight, one of two directors of the series on TBS. And he has been directing and producing hidden camera for years. And it is just awesome to have him here. Now, it'd be funny if I just did a whole hour of just an introduction and never said his name, right? That would be horrible. That'd be like the worst radio ever.
I love it.
Yeah. There he is. You just heard his voice. Do you know who that is, everyone? That is Damon Zwicker. Hello, Damon.
Hey, Vic. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's great to be here tonight.
It is awesome to have you. As I said in the introduction, I'm a huge fan of hidden camera comedy. And I'm in particular, I'm a huge fan of your work.
Oh, thanks, Vic.
Yes.
I love your work, too.
Well, that is nice of you to say.
And I love hidden camera.
Yeah. Now, let's just start with what we're doing right now professionally together, because it's really exciting. We're working together on a show called Deal With It on TBS. And it's also, not only is it on TBS, but our first episodes are also airing on True TV.
That's right.
So why don't you explain to everyone the show, the series?
Well, just to mention too, the show is, I believe, the highest rated show that's come out on True TV. I think the ratings have been excellent on that network as well.
Yeah, and if you have not seen the show, everyone, check it out. You can also go on YouTube. Just, I believe there's some clips and previews from the show. And also, as long as we're talking about the show, I do want to remind you all that I have an hour interview with Theo Von, the host of Take It All. Take It All. That's another show I did with Howie. That's called Deal With It. Theo's the host. And also, we have a frequent celebrity co-host and actor, Alex Mandel. And we did an hour with him as well here on the show.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, and both those interviews are fantastic, honestly, I must say.
Both those guys have been around on the show, and they've done a great job on the show, for sure.
So tell us all about the show again, from your perspective.
So Deal With It is a Howie Mandel executive produced show, which really, to me, I think that Howie's kind of been the driving force behind it in a lot of ways, and a lot of the creative, and a lot of at least what I've tried to capture and what I do. So the show brings together, let me start over.
Well, I'm just going to jump in, and and you can throw in, it's a game show. It's a half hour game show around hidden camera. We often have, Theo Von, that is, often has a guest host, a celebrity that you've seen on television, very well-known people. And they, we bring someone in who is unsuspecting, doesn't know they're going to be on a game show. And we put an earbud in their ear, and Theo and our celebrity host talks to the contestant and asks them to do certain things for a certain amount of money. And the more they do, the more a contestant does with an unsuspecting friend at a dinner table, it's usually in a restaurant, the more money they make. And the most you can make is $5,000. There's five levels to this, five levels of difficulty. The first level being $250, and then $500, and $750, and $1,000, and then $2,500, I believe, are the levels.
That's right.
So, okay.
I think you did a pretty good job.
I think so.
We got a better job than I did.
Well, you know what? I think because I came fresh off the set today. You know, it's like still in my blood. And it was a great day today. I wish I could tell everyone about it.
Good.
We had such a fun time. Now, also, what's fun about being on a hidden camera set the way Howie does, and also, we really need to talk about Mike Harney. I mean, he is really brilliant. He is a genius at this, and his contributions are incredible. And also, Tom Klein and Doug Perkins.
Tom Klein.
Boy, my brain is fried.
I feel better about not being able to explain the show now.
Yeah, thank you. Boy, I really, that's crazy that I said that. Tom Klein did shit on this show. So forget Tom Klein. But Tom Kramer, yes. I mean.
And Tom Kramer and Mike Harney have both been around Hidden Camera for a long time, longer than me. And Mike, I met on Spy TV years and years ago, which was an NBC show.
Yeah, and what's so cool about the show, and also I'd be remiss if we're going to talk about the staff here, these people. You know, what happens is we come up with ideas of how we'd like to see a game played, but there's a lot of improvisation in the moment. And also, you know, definitely need to mention Mike Marks. He contributes a lot, and Roy Banks, very much a very big part of the voice of the show, very
yep.
creative. So... describe what's going on when you're directing this show.
I think that my job basically as a director on this show is to capture the funny. I mean, that's it. It's just about trying to get what's happening out there on a live stage and just put it on the screen as best I can. And that's one of the fun things about it, because there is a lot of improv. There's a lot of craziness that happens. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know where the person who doesn't know that they're on a hidden camera is going to go.
Right.
And you also don't know where the person who's in on the hidden camera, who has the earpiece in their ear being told what to do, where they're going to go.
Well, how many cameras do you have on our show?
We have 9.
Okay. I thought I counted 11 on the monitor today. Is there a camera that's not counted, like that's on the host in the back?
No, there are 12.
Oh, okay. So but the hidden ones
correct.
Are 9?
There are usually 9 hidden cameras.
Okay, yeah. And then there's some, as we call them, exposed, because they're getting behind the scenes?
In the back with Theo and the... Yes. Correct.
Okay. All right, great. And so prior to the shoot, there's a lot of pre-production, correct? Because
definitely.
I mean, as far as you're going, your work goes, because you have to create what are called hides, which are seemingly, they look like they're part of the atmosphere or decor of our location, but truly they're little booths with double-sided glass.
That's
correct.
Right. Joe Warson, the production designer, who I've worked with for a long time, he also did Scare Tactics. But they have to create hides to put the camera guys
in. That's the technical term we call that. Yeah, hides. No, really.
Hides to put the camera guys in so that people won't suspect that they're on a television show.
Yes. I mean, the amount of creativity that goes into hiding the quote-unquote hides is in itself just fascinating. I mean, you would walk onto a set, I'm telling you, all of you listening, and you would walk in there and you would have no idea that there are literally people behind these little booths shooting everything going on.
I hate talking about it. You know that?
Yeah.
I don't want to let anyone in on the secret.
Yeah, that's true. But
we can talk about it.
You know what? This is something that people can find online. It's kind of like talking about, you know, how to build a bomb or something. You're like, well, maybe I shouldn't talk about that.
Can you say that word over?
A bomb? You don't want it when you're talking about TV. But the point being that even if people know it, they wouldn't know it. I mean, it's,
right. You
know, it's so well designed.
I think there are cameras everywhere nowadays anyways.
That's a good point.
Everywhere. We were at a restaurant the other day scouting for a future location, and you look up and there's just a video camera up. It's like, you know, just you don't think about it, I don't think, nowadays.
Not at all. And on our first episodes, we had Joan Rivers and...
Melissa Rivers?
Yes, Joan and Melissa. Now, were you part of that episode? Did you direct that one?
I did not.
Okay.
Well, I directed the bit.
Okay. You're giving me hand signals, but it's better to talk because it is radio.
Well, I don't know how much
you
of the process
okay,
that I'm
that's
allowed
fine.
To,
yeah, that's a good point.
To
okay.
let out.
Yeah,
you know
Damon makes a good point because we signed non-disclosures, so we really have to be very careful. We can't talk about too much of like what hasn't aired yet and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff just to contractually fulfill our obligations.
But the answer is yes, I did direct Melissa and Joan Rivers a bit.
Okay.
That they were involved with.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some incredible stars on the show, and it's been just an incredible
Heidi
experience.
Klum.
Heidi Klum, yes. She was fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and that one aired, so we can talk a little bit about that one.
Sure.
Let's just say she gets her ass smacked.
She does all improv.
Yeah, and again, some of this stuff is online. So, or check out True TV. You know, I would definitely DVR it. What makes in your mind, this particular show deal with it so unique?
I think it's a smart format. First of all, it's a repeatable format that people, when you tune in, you know what's going to happen. You're going to get snippets of little comedy bites straight through the whole half hour. You can tune in almost at any point in time and find something funny.
That's a great point. You know what else I love about this show? And we're talking about hidden camera and kind of a theory behind it and certain things that I think are really important is I always like the idea that if someone's watching TV and they're flipping through the channels, they stop when something's going on and they think, what in the hell is that?
That's
and
right.
I must watch.
Yeah.
And I think we do an excellent job. There's a lot of really great physicality.
Yes.
And that alone, you just want to, you could watch this show with no sound and it would be a great show.
Yeah. The two Italian guys, in the first cycle, one of the first episodes that aired where they had the pillow fight and they were chasing each other around. I mean, it's like a throwback to old sitcoms almost to me.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure for you, one of the challenges, you know, when you're directing, let's say a sitcom or a drama, everything's very blocked out. Now, when we do hidden camera, there's some blocking, and you've blocked me in the past prior to the taping, kind of where I'll be, but we don't know the people coming in. Everything is real. When you watch our show, these people have no idea what's happening, and that there has been no rehearsal with them. Everything that you are seeing on this show is happening for the first time in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it incredibly exciting, and for some people, scary. For me, it's my favorite type of acting. Other people wouldn't want to do this acting. Yeah, They'd want to know their lines. I'd rather do this. I'm more comfortable with this.
I think on a hidden camera show, the actors are out there more than any other time, and you either fly or you die. I mean, it's one of those things. You got to be great. You got to be quick on your feet. You got to be funny.
Well, one of the things that I learned from Howie Mandel, and who's, you know, kind of, he's the it man, I believe, when it comes to hidden camera. He's just, you know, a savant at this.
Yeah.
I mean, he could do a 4-year university class, you know, a degree. Yeah. And I've had the good fortune of attending it, having, you know, been able to work with him so closely all these years. And his philosophy is it's not about the actor. It's about the people we're pranking. They're the stars.
Right.
So it's a little different philosophy than some shows. Like, for example, and this is no knock on Jamie Kennedy Experiment. That show was very successful, and it just kind of, in my mind, took a different approach to hidden camera, in that Jamie was playing zany characters, and it was more or as much about those characters as it was the people he was pranking. Would you agree?
Jamie Kennedy's a star, and that show was a vehicle him to create incredible characters. Incredible creative characters that are funny. And it's like, but that's the Jamie Kennedy Experiment. It's like, look at me, I'm putting on this crazy character.
Right, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's just
different.
It's different. And I think that what I love about Howie's approach, and which is also Mike Carney's and all of our approaches, is that we're playing it real, and that it is about the people we're pranking. It really harkens back to, and I use the word harkens, I don't do that very often. It really goes back to the earliest of hidden camera shows, which would be Candid Camera, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the fun part about hidden cameras, this study of people and what are they going to do, put in a different situation. I think that in society you're taught to be so polite nowadays that it's interesting to watch how much can you get away with. As an actor, I think you see it a lot of times when you're in a scene, is how far can I push this person before they're going to have an adverse reaction or want to get out of the situation, or they're going to try and do something interesting to talk their way out of it.
Well, the funniest things when I'm out there acting what I keep in my head, and it's not, it's just fortunately it's become very natural because I've done it a lot, is I want them to talk as much as possible. I don't want to be the one doing all the talking, and I won't be, even right. if there's quiet, because it's not, that's not what this is. You know, we want to see the reactions. We want to see the awkward pauses, the moments where they're squirming. And a lot of actors, I believe, sometimes who haven't done this, they feel that it's their time to put on a, you know, a Shakespearean performance. And they're right. and they are uncomfortable with the discomfort of the mark. That's the person we're pranking. And so they start doing things to comfort them. Also a huge mistake as an actor, because we want to see the discomfort.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, and I'm sure you've seen this in your work with some actors.
Definitely. And I think that one of the hardest parts, I think, that I've heard in being an actor is listening. And just kind of being there in the moment, you know, there's a lot of exercises, look each other in the eyes and just kind of sit there and look at each other. And it's in hidden camera, those are the moments that force the other person into such an uncomfortable position that they have to react and they have to take some action to get out of the situation that they're in.
100%. And what I have found is that by listening, it dictates what I'm going to do. If right. I'm not listening, I'm not even in the scene. You know, if I'm just trying to think about what I'm going to say next, that's what I love about it. When you're on, you know, when you're doing hidden camera and you and the director have to keep up on this, you're right on all, you know, what's being said, of course, but it's a crazy dance and you don't know where it's going to go. And sometimes I'll just be not saying anything and they'll say something and I'll, you know, my ears perk up and I'll explore like questions like, tell me how you feel about that.
Yeah.
You know, you look upset.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Open-ended questions.
Right. No yes or no question. You look upset.
Yeah.
I'm getting the sense, you know, something's wrong here or whatever the case may be.
Right.
You know, and those are such nuanced things that you have to keep in mind when you're acting.
Yeah.
And you are doing a dance as the director with us, the actor, yet, you know, we don't see what's going on behind the scenes because we're out on the stage, so to speak.
Yeah. We're lucky enough on this show that Mike Harney's been around for so long that he knows how to equip the show so that it's covered. The coverage is, it works wherever we are in the location. And, you know, you talked about it earlier in covering the scene with the cameras. And one of the things that's tough also is that there's no movement in the cameras. The cameras are stationary the entire time. You're kind of stuck in one spot.
It's a great point.
It's, you know, in a drama, you can move, you can put it on a dolly and move it. You can put it on a crane, wherever you want. And
dollies would be, explain what a dolly is.
A dolly is a rig that you put a camera on top of that has wheels on it that goes on a track.
It looks like a train track. It
looks like a train track.
And you would follow the action?
Follow
right?
the action right
okay.
along, right?
Yeah, of course you can't do that because they'd see the camera.
Right. And so it's, in that way, it's interesting too because you have to kind of forethink what's going to happen. Where could they possibly go and really have the whole area covered?
Mm-hmm. Although you can't obviously get everything covered because the other thing that, you know, when you're acting, when an actor is engaged in the scene, they often wear an earpiece, not always, but sometimes so the director can communicate right into their ear and say, a little to your left, Vic, a little to your left, because you're blocking the shot, Vic, things like that. So when one is acting in a hidden camera bit, when I'm acting in a hidden camera bit, I have to be aware of what the director's telling me as far as my blocking goes and be 100% present in the scene and then and react in the moment. And it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's a unique, it's the only kind of acting that's like that.
It's like a live sitcom where I think the actors are given a little bit more freedom than a sitcom actor.
Yes.
You don't necessarily have every line written out for you before you go in. You have the ability to kind of improovise,
even though
you're being fed lines sometimes from behind from people, you do also have to kind of think pretty quickly and improvise and just be on top of things.
Another thing, Damon, that I find so fascinating about hidden camera is that there are two, in my mind, types of hidden camera situations. And when I mean situations, I'm talking about the marks, the people that we will be pranking. There are some situations where we have multiple marks. And a multiple marks would mean, let's say, for example, the hidden camera bit was you're at a popsicle stand you know, and we have a camera there, and our actor is selling popsicles at a popsicle stand. And every half hour, a different person comes over, and we shoot them hidden camera, get a great bit, and then they leave, and then the next person comes up. That would be multiple marks. That one bit, the popsicle sale thing, we get multiple people to do. And it's great because it amortizes your cost as a hidden camera production because you can get more bits for the cost of one setup. And then there is one hidden camera show that I wrote on and also acted in that cost a fortune to make where there were no multiple marks, and that literally, if the person got wind of the bit or something went wrong, you know, technically, there was no turning back.
Right.
And I'm guessing, I mean, it was hundreds of thousands. I don't know, maybe $1 million. I don't know how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of this show was. I'm talking about Mobbed on Fox. And again, all of you, if you haven't seen this series, it was on Fox a few years ago, maybe even a year ago. Just look up M-O-B-B-E-D, Mobbed. That was the show. Or Howie Mandel. There might be some clips of me in it too.
Well, one of my favorite performances of yours was when you were the record label president sitting behind the desk, and you were going to take the guy's song and you were going to flip it into a rap song.
Right.
And he was kind of a rocker, I think, is what. And I thought the guy was going to come over the table at you. And to me, it was an amazing performance by you to be able to sit there in the chair and just kind of sit. It's so weird to say, but just to sit and not do anything, to me, was amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Because I thought the guy was going to come over the table. It was so intense to me.
Yeah, it was for me too.
Yeah. Was it scary though? I mean, well, it's got to be. That's the thing, like being on the floor. I've done bits too where guys have been hit in the head. People have run through glass doors because they don't know what's going on. And it's kind of a scary thing.
Right. No, I love it because I really love people. And I have a very good sense, as far as how far I can push someone. I have been told, I remember once on How We Do It, we had a bit where I was dressed as a woman in a fake dating show, and the guy was very unhappy, the contestant, when I was the one, it was rigged, of course, that he got matched up with through, of course, our computer system. And I remember that I was kept trying to hold his hand, and people were concerned I would get, you know, the guy would just start swinging. But, you know, I had a good sense of how many times I could do it. And, you know, there's a fine line, and I think there's an instinct that one develops, or just naturally, as far as how far, you know, and I have a really good sense of it. And in that case, what happened was we had a bunch of brothers, and two of them were in an argument, and they were in a band. So the ruse, we always started each Mobbed episode with a hidden camera prank, which then blossomed into a mob, like, you know, was singing and dancing, a flash mob. So in this case, two brothers were battling it out. They hadn't talked in a long time. And so the ruse was we got a hold of, this is broad strokes here, but somehow a studio got a hold of their music and loved it. And we brought the band in, and it was the creepiest set. It was in a warehouse. At the end of the warehouse was like one white desk and a carpet, and we had like some like really scantily clad models and me. And I had this really horrible beard. Actually, it's pretty cool. I like your beard thing. It's horrible. That's a nice compliment. But and then what we did is we said, we isolated the guy we were gonna be surprising, and we were pranking, and said, you know, I'm like, who's the lead? Because this is amazing. The voice in this song is incredible. And he goes, oh my God. I go, really spoke to me. And he goes, really? You know, yeah. You know, guys, can I just talk to your lead singer here? So the brothers all left, and it's just me and him. And we had the bit. There were some brilliant ideas from the staff about the idea was that we took his song and we removed all his vocals and turned it into a rap song. And we knew that he hated rap. And so what you're describing, Damon, when you saw the episode, and again, I think there's a clip online on YouTube, is this guy just going crazy?
He looked like he was going to jump over the table any second. I was like, Vic's going to get punched today.
Yeah, and what happened was he kept screaming, get away from me, get away from me. And this is what we're talking about. If this guy leaves the set, there's no bit. I mean, we've got, you know, hundreds, maybe 1,000 people outside that warehouse ready to dance and sing to a multiple of song, you know, tons of songs. And I mean, like, so much had been put into this. And this guy at that moment, what happened was he was afraid I was going to whack him. Because it was so scary in that warehouse.
Yeah.
That he thought I was dangerous. So when the cameras came out, he said, oh, good.
So wait, let's paint the picture though. You're how tall and you weigh how much?
Well, I play 5'3 to 5'8. Okay, 5'2.5 to 5'8. I play 130 to 152.
Yeah. Not to put you on the spot.
No, not at all. Hey, I'm answering.
It's a
fair question.
You're a very large man.
But this kid was pretty much, he wasn't exactly a weightlifter himself, but he was definitely freaked out. And fortunately, we kept him there, and then it went off without a hitch. But yeah. It was scary for me too. You know, I made sure I stayed behind my desk. I mean, I was in front and then I went behind because I thought he would jump. Have you ever seen, you know, I just want to remind everyone, when we say the shows you've worked on, Scare Tactics is a huge, legendary hidden camera show. And again, Mike Harney, spearheading our project, was one of the leaders of that.
Absolutely.
Brilliant show.
Yep.
And so we get his experience. It's part of the excitement of working on this show.
Yeah.
You know, currently.
No, it's a great team. And I, like I said, I've known Mike for a long time and I think he's great.
Yeah. He really knows how to.
And we've been through a lot of weird experiences on hidden camera shows, mm-hmm. I think.
Just what do you mean by that?
People's behavior sometimes is erratic.
Are you talking about people running the show?
I think.
Or are you talking? No, I'm serious. I'm not sure because you said people.
I think that the people that you work with on the hidden camera shows, you get to see a lot of interesting behaviors from people who are in front of the camera.
I think it's the human nature of people.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people who are involved in hidden camera.
Of the people we're pranking.
That's the most important thing is the most interesting thing is seeing how people react in situations.
What has been the craziest? Before I go there, I just want to be very clear for all of you exactly what the shows we're talking about. Now, Scare Tactics was on Sci-Fi.
That's right.
Right. And it was like their biggest hit ever, would you say?
I don't know if it was the biggest hit ever, but they were pretty happy
with
it. It's
acclaimed.
It's run for a long time.
Right. And again, go on YouTube, give yourself a treat. And look at some of these episodes. Any one particular you'd recommend?
Sure, Vampire Motorbikers.
Vampire Motorbikers, okay. Were you a part of that one in
any
way?
Yeah, that's one that I directed, yeah.
Okay, any others you directed?
There's a lot of them. Offhand, I don't have titles of them, but...
Okay, well,
I did a few seasons of that show, and the difference between that show and, I think, Deal With It is a comedy. So it's light, it's bright, it's supposed to be well-lit. You know, and it's very sitcom-y in the fact that you want everything to play in the close-up. And Scare Tactics, what we tried to do, I think, was to create a bigger cinematic kind of vision for that show. And it's almost like it's a horror movie that somebody steps into when they become the lead character in it.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Scare Tactics, this would be an awesome time to become a fan. You know, they're easy to get those episodes online, you know, purchase, rent. Whatever. And the premise of the show, a half hour, basically, it's just scaring the crap out of people. You know, it's that simple.
Yep.
And now I had the good fortune prior to booking you here on this show, Damon, to talk to Mike Harney about you. And it was very interesting. He said something I was not aware of, and that he credits you largely with what you just described, the cinematic look of the whole series, because evidently you were a part of the early formation of kind of what the show was going to look like visually. So that's quite a nice comment.
That's a great compliment. I'm very thankful for that compliment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, I came out of USC, so as a film student, I went through film production undergraduate there. And it was always about, to me, that show, the great part about it was that you get to create a different cinematic scene and put somebody into it every week. So I think that we always try to kind of light it differently and stylize it in a different way so that every segment is a little bit different.
So it's not about just banging out a bit where you're going to just scare someone to death. It sounds like it's also kind of, you're looking at this as a piece of art.
It wasn't, to me, it was never about banging them out. It was always about doing them differently and lighting them differently. And The show has since kind of moved on, and they took it out of the country. And it's kind of, I think it's different, you know. I'm biased, but it's got a different flavor to it, I think.
Where how's the flavor changed?
I think it's a little more, that's duller.
Not enough edge?
How about that? Not enough edge. But here's the thing. When I did Scare Tactics, the beginning, we were kind of pushing the limits, too. In that the legal limits, and you didn't know what the legal ramifications of a lot of things were. And as you do Hidden Camera, you get to learn all the legal...
What were some of the legal things you learned, and maybe the hard way?
I think how far you can push people.
How far can you push them?
Subjective. So it's you're out there in the middle of the desert, and a guy's scared to death. Does he have a gun on him? Does he have a knife on him? You know, so
you don't know that ahead of time?
You have to ask him before he comes in. But, I mean, how many guys carrying a concealed weapon, is he going to say to you, oh, yeah, I have a concealed weapon in my back pocket?
Did anyone ever have one?
Luckily, no. Not on the shoots that I was on.
It'd bring a whole new meaning to shoot. Right?
Definitely.
It'd be you guys scared.
But, you know, I've seen some things where Dave Sheridan, who's done a lot of Hidden Camera, he was on Buzzkill, and Travis Draft, who also, they created Buzzkill way back when for MTV.
Game show, right?
Buzzkill was Travis Draft, Dave Sheridan, and Frank Huditz, and they would go around and they just kind of did crazy things. It was pre-Tom Green. So it was kind of... They would
Tom
go
Green
down,
light a little bit.
Tom, I mean, they were crazy. If
really?
You see,
I'll have to check that out.
They're great. They were great. They went down to Nashville and they would break into a record producer's office and they'd, you know, one of them was playing the guitar and kicking around on his desk. The other one's the manager and they dressed up. I mean, it's crazy.
So connect that to what you're.
So Dave Sheridan and Travis Draft basically did a bit for me, and they came out. Boy, where is I going with this?
We're talking about what you learned about how far you can go, how far you can push.
Dave and Travis have pushed and pushed and pushed. But anyways, Dave and Travis were in a bit, and Dave had a fake knife in the bag. And I said, no, take the knife out, pull the knife out. I don't want to have the knife in the bit. You can't do it for legal reasons. Well, Dave, being as crazy as he is, ends up pulling the knife out in the middle of the bit.
Yeah, he went against the director.
Yeah, imagine
that.
That's
a big deal. That was just because your family, I guess, after you worked so long. But I mean, that's a huge no-no.
I've known Dave for a long time, and I know he's kind of out there.
So you know when you're working with him.
Yeah, and I know Travis was there, and Travis has been in hundreds of bits with me.
Okay.
And so Dave pulls the knife out,
was that a general rule? You cannot have fake knives on the set?
I don't know if it was in place at that point.
Okay.
But it may have come in. Anyway, so the kid jumps over the front seat and just starts pounding Dave in the head. I mean, fists are flying. Travis is Dave's good friend. They've known each other forever. So Travis is telling the kid, no, you know, and then the reveal comes in.
Did you use that in the final cut, the beating up?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet that was a big discussion with the network.
I don't know.
Yeah. Is that online?
That's probably online.
What would be the name of that episode?
That was a Hitchhiker episode. If you look up Hitchhiker.
So you guys would shoot in locations that just... by their very nature, would scare people.
We would
in
shoot
the woods.
In the middle of the desert. We were in Vegas, and we would shoot in the middle of the desert and bring out lights and put up four light, you know, big, huge work lights, and that's it. You know, right. You get driven out and dropped off. And you had nowhere to go.
Why Las Vegas or why Nevada? Was it due to hidden camera laws?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so most of you, and now you're, when you set out a country, they're now shooting in Canada.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, great. Now, when you scare someone that bad, there's a saying that says, you know, scared the beep out of me.
Right.
Had you ever had that on the set where a mark, again, that's someone who doesn't know they're on camera, literally pooped themselves?
I think after seeing it so many times and you begin to learn that crazy things can happen and it starts to kind of wear on me. And the one that got me was...
But hold on. Did anyone ever...
poop their pants?
Yeah. I love that we both said poop. It feels very grown up, doesn't it?
It's very grown up. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
not,
you know what?
Not to my knowledge.
One day, if we ever get Mike Harney in here, we'll have to find out.
I bet Mike knows.
How about on staff? Did you ever poop your pants?
Yes.
Okay, good. And that was on the drive over here.
It was usually due to too much alcohol at the Vegas casinos.
Oh, very nice.
Only happened once.
That's a great story for another episode.
Yeah, it's another episode.
I wish we could squeeze that in right now.
I jest.
Yeah.
But you started, that show was so kind of out of the box. And seeing people get scared. One kid... Travis Draft was in another bit where he was getting his back. We made it look like he was getting his back filleted in a leather shop so that it appeared as though the leather shop owner was using human skin to tan and to create clothing. And so the kid kind of walked in the room, saw Travis with his back open and Travis was screaming. And a kid just turned and bolted and ran out the front door of an old Las Vegas leather tannery store, mm-hmm. and missed the push bar and hit the glass.
Oh.
And the glass wasn't tempered. It was an old store, so it was just plate glass. And he just kind of flopped over the push bar. And I just saw big plates of glass kind of come down. And I was like, tonight somebody's going to go to jail because this kid is going to, he's going to be.
Think he just die?
I think he just died. Like literally sheet, you know, like a big sheet of glass.
Oh my God.
And so he was flopped over the rail for a little bit. And then after a few seconds, which seemed like a long time, he kind of stood up. He pushed the bar out. And of course, at this time, people were yelling, "You're on a hidden camera show." He pushed the door out and ran. And somebody caught him, you know, of course, a block or two down and brought him back. But his wrists were cut. His face was cut, like right between his eyes. He had a big cut.
Thank God it didn't get worse.
It just, you know, and it's like, is that, I don't know. It just started to wear me. It's like, okay.
So there's an emotional toll.
It's a little bit much.
Well, because these are real people.
They're real people. And it's this kid had been set up by somebody else.
Right.
So it's like, okay, what's.
Do you ever run into like a moral or ethical dilemma? When you're doing hidden camera, I don't.
You know what? That's why Deal With It is so great.
Because yeah, I've never had to deal with that kind of, because it's all fun and light.
It's all fun and it's all light. And it's all comedy. It's not about, you know, trying to make people feel a negative energy. It's just kind of putting them in an uncomfortable spot.
And someone's going to win potentially $5,000.
Somebody's winning money. It's light. You know what I mean? It's not like we're trying to do anything crazy. It's comedy. And I think that's what's great. The whole thing is comedy, comedy, comedy. It's like laugh, laugh, laugh. It's not mean. It's not angry. It's not.
You're
it's
right.
About being funny. It's like, wow, what greater job can you ask for, basically?
Yeah,
for me, it's like Howie Mandel show.
Right.
That's
He's
about
at every
comedy.
Shoot.
And all I have to do is try and capture the funny. It's like, are you kidding me? That's the greatest job in the world.
I agree. I'm right there with you. Every day it's a gift to go into that show.
Absolutely.
As it is in all Howie shows, I'd say. You know, my experience has been.
Yeah.
Now, you also started, I want to kind of backtrack just for a moment, because I want to kind of understand how you got to where you and I are sitting here talking about you directing with Howie Mandel and Mike Carney. And you went to USC, you did an undergrad in film school.
That's right.
That's not an easy school to get into. The film school is very challenging.
That's right.
So were you a brilliant high school student or did
No, I was a horrible high school student.
Did you make a crazy awesome film that got you in?
No.
So what happened? Did your parents buy a building?
Definitely not.
An outhouse?
When I was 18, here's how it happened. I was a horrible high school student.
And you were in Massachusetts?
I was in Massachusetts.
Where?
Groton, small town central.
Was it Agroton?
Agroton?
I don't know.
Yeah, cheese on top.
I don't know. Okay, so you were in Groton?
So I was in Groton, Massachusetts, small town. There were 100 people in my high school. And one of my friends, her mother was a casting person in Boston. And at the time, I had just bought rollerblades. I was an ice hockey player. I bought rollerblades. So I would rollerblade around town. And she said, look, there's a commercial shooting. They're looking for people who know how to rollerblade. You know how to do it. I was like, yeah. She goes, you want to go in and be in a commercial? I don't know. Yeah, sure. So we went in, got the commercial, and I thought it was the greatest job ever. Literally, we played street hockey for 6 hours. There was food everywhere. They're like, do you need anything else? Spritzing us. And then a few months later, I got a residual check for thousands of dollars. And I'm like, this is the greatest job in the world.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I was like, wow, I had never, living in Massachusetts, I'd never thought about producing television, directing television, directing, you know, none of that
stuff.
Were
you one of those junkies where you went to every movie that came out?
Oh, I loved movies. I mean, that was my saddest, like, I love movies forever.
And a TV junkie as well?
Please, the TV was on every night. My mother was like, shut that TV off, shut the TV off. I got a TV, put it in my room.
What were you watching, like, Can of Camera? Carol Burnett? I don't know how your age, but...
All in the Family, I love. Cheers, I love. You know, it's like all these sitcoms that were...
Comedy.
Comedy. And it was just... It was, because to me, it was just light. It's like, I would hang out with those people.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm a big fan of your work, Damon. I don't know if you know that. And I loved you in Tight Shorts. And I know you had an acting role in that.
Oh, Tight Shorts.
Tight Shorts.
That was a comedy movie that I produced. Did you see it?
No, I did not see it, but I saw it on the...
it's online.
The credit. I saw the credits online. I'm like, oh really? He did porn. Because Tight Shorts does not even sound like a legitimate anything.
I think it was a UCLA thing that I just did
love
for somebody.
I love that that's where your one acting credit.
Yeah.
I think you have one acting credit. I'm sure you've done more than one thing, but it's like Tight Shorts.
Yeah. No, Tight Shorts.
Hey, we all need to pay the bills. It's an expense. USC is expensive.
It was a favor, I think, to somebody.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
So you decide I like this business. Like, yeah, look at all this money rolling in.
Yeah. And it was fun. It was great. I was like, I've loved TV forever. Please, if that's a job, I'm in. It's like just making TV because I loved it.
Who were your legends as a kid? Like the people you wish, I'd love to work with that guy or lady.
Well, look, I grew up in New England, so Bobby Orr was a legend.
Okay. Very funny guy.
Johnny Busick's another very funny guy.
I'm talking comedic legends. not like, sports legends.
All
although
sitcoms. Sitcoms to me were like, it was just light. It was easy. It was great.
Was there anyone in particular, though, like actors, you're like, oh, or have you worked with any of them out here that, you know, like as a kid, you're like, oh, that guy, that is just a genius.
Boy, I'm just thinking back, you know, look, there's the Brady Bunch. There's Different Strokes. There's All in the Family. There's Cheers.
There wasn't like one person. I get that.
No,
it was more about the format, the show, the story, and just that whole sitcom.
Yeah.
Like I said, episode, the life of the sitcom versus a particular actor.
Yeah.
Some people grow up, they're like, I have to meet, you know, I got to meet someone. But it sounds like that wasn't you.
I love actors. I think they're great. They're always interesting to me. I love them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of my favorites was Howie. And so to have the opportunity to work with him, how awesome.
Incredible.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but I understand exactly what you're saying. And now you find yourself immersed in it. So you get, you figured, I'm going to apply to USC.
So I went to a community college for television, kind of, you know, a little three camera television, Mount Wachusett Community College.
Sure, sure.
Television and broadcasting program.
Right.
So I went, loved it.
That must have been a tough class.
Transferred to USC.
What was that like? You're in a community college watching TV shows.
It's the greatest thing ever. Making TV shows.
Oh, you're making them.
Yeah,
so
it was
I'm just giving you a hard time, but it was, but you actually, and you got the grades to transfer into USC?
Transfer to USC, but the film school you have to apply separately to.
Okay.
So I got to USC orientation and I said, well, I want to take film classes. And I go, well, you got to be in the film school to take the film classes. And if you're not in the film school, you can't take the classes. You can only take a couple of them. And I was like, oh boy, it's a whole thing. And so they're like, well, you should do your general education. Go do biology and algebra and all that, whatever, you know, calculus. Get all this stuff out of the way. And apply to film school again. I said, I didn't come to USC to not go to film school.
You could have done it in Wachita Chattuchi Community College.
That's right. So
it'd be a lot cheaper, too.
I called my father, who God bless, he and my mother, they helped me pay for USC.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to USC. I didn't come to take general ed classes. I'm going to take film classes, and I just want your blessing on it. He goes, go ahead. Do what you want to do. You know,
gift, right?
Unbelievable.
That kind of support.
And so I took, all I did was take film classes. At the same time, I went to Santa Monica Community College and did my...
Because you missed Wichita Chattuchu.
Because I had Wichita Chattuchu.
And you wanted to do another community experience.
But I got all my, whatever, biology and all that stuff.
You saved some money, right?
Out of the way.
Because they all transferred.
Yes, they all transferred in.
Smart.
That was a good thing. But also let me take the film classes. So I got to know the film instructors who then wrote recommendations to get me into the film school.
Oh, okay.
So that's the long
So the recommendations
story.
Were coming from Santa Monica College?
From USC, because I took the film classes at USC. So I took, all I did was take, there were certain film
ones
classes
you could take. As a non-major.
Yeah, and I also, I petitioned to get into a couple other classes, because I'm like, okay. Look, this is, Anyways.
So you actually got into the film school through that?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was that like your sophomore year?
That was my junior year. So it's a 2-year program, basically.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Great. Now,
Well, let me ask you a question. You are a sitcom. I heard you talking with Mark about sitcoms.
Mark Price. Prior guest from Family Ties.
Yes.
He played Skippy.
That's right.
Yes, Michael J. Fox's good friend on that sitcom.
And you guys talked about sitcoms a lot. Are you a sitcom fan?
I enjoy sitcoms, but certain types I have kind of picky taste.
Because you had a Dick Van Dyke reference in there.
Oh, did I? I don't even remember.
Are you a Dick Van Dyke fan?
I mean, I've loved Dick Van Dyke, and I think he's a brilliant actor. I mean, comedically, he's, you know.
Sam Denoff, who was a big writer during that time, Sam Denoff and Bill Persky, basically, Sam was one of the guys who got me into film school, and he's passed away, but he was a sitcom writer, Mary Tyler Moore, Dick Van Dyke Show, I mean, all that.
How do you spell his name? We'll look him up.
S-A-M-D-E-N-O-F-F.
Denoff. Okay, so he was one of those old school 70s
sitcom. Smoked a cigar, sat back, like classy. It was unbelievable.
How did he help you?
I took one of the classes that he was teaching, which was a 4-camera sitcom class, which is all I wanted to do anyways. And he wrote me the recommendation. So
got you into the film school.
Yeah.
Have you directed a sitcom?
I have not directed a sitcom.
Is that one of your goals?
I'd love to direct sitcoms.
So are you working on that actively?
I guess so. I don't know. How do you break into that? It's like Fred Savage directs sitcoms now because Fred Savage is like an actor.
Well, that means you need to become a child star.
Rewind.
Right. And then, or like the same thing with Ron Howard, right?
Exactly.
But then there are plenty of others who can't make that transition.
Right.
So that's what I do like about Hollywood is that doesn't matter. Like, you really have to prove yourself at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like Laverne and Shirley, everyone knows that. Or if you don't know, Penny Marshall is Gary Marshall's sister.
Yep.
Gary Marshall not only created Happy Days, but he also created Laverne and Shirley. And Gary Marshall, in that sitcom, Laverne and Shirley, put his sister in there as lead character.
Yep.
But if she couldn't perform, that just would never happen.
Right.
If she couldn't do the job. So you still got to show up and do the work.
Definitely.
And she did.
Yeah.
So
I love Laverne and Shirley, by the way.
Yeah.
So, and Happy Days.
Yeah. Always feel good.
Keep naming them.
So now you get out of USC. You've got these bills, hopefully most of them paid for.
So got out of USC, had some debt. Everybody has debt, so it doesn't matter.